is up, everybody? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
What's up? I'm Pete.
And on The Stack, we talk about a ton of books that have come out this week. We review them just for you. So let's get into it, because there's some big ones, and there are lots of them. Kicking it off with Absolute Superman number one from DC Comics, written by Jason Aaron, art by Rafa Sandoval. Now, this is the third one out of the gate of the new Absolute Universe line. We are getting a revamped, reviewed Superman. Lots of big changes here, as we find he's gone from Man of the Steel to Man of the People, if you will.
Wow. He is famously known as Man of the Steel.
It's the Man of the Steel.
Man of the Steel.
Anyway, we loved, I think, Absolute Batman and Absolute Wonder Woman. So what'd you think about this one? Did they have a hat trick with this new Absolute Universe?
Let me start by saying I saw this annoying TikTok guy talk about how they changed the artists around.
Bring this up. Yeah.
But good information to know before reading this.
I give a little clarification here? So this was a thing that we put up on TikTok, where news came out via Sketched, which is an awesome website everybody should check out. But they had a really great deep dive into the art process. And it turns out that Rafael Albuquerque was the original artist on this, did a bunch of the development designs. But ultimately, there was catastrophic flooding in Brazil that prevented him from going to his studio. He was also very busy working on relief efforts and everything else. So Rafa Sandoval jumped in about a month before San Diego Comic-Con and is drawing the title going on from there. So I think what Pete is getting at, because you love the Kirky, is as soon as I heard that, I saw the vision. Like, that's certainly more of a piece with Hayden Sherman on Wonder Woman and Nick Dragotta on Batman. But not to jump ahead of you, I think obviously it's a very different tone, because Rafa Sandoval is like superhero artist versus Albuquerque is a little more of an independent, a little sketchier, more cartoony feel.
And I would say horror
a vibe
back up your point of all of these comics in this line, it feels like a little darker, a little heavier, horror infused. So maybe that's what you're talking about.
Yes, but Pete, that's just the information, just to lay that out there for our listeners who don't know what you're talking about with the TikTok, but go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, it's always nice to have someone translate for you. You know what I mean? It really helps. Yeah.
That's what
I say. Whenever you watch, you look at TikTok, Pete, it's something weird's going to come out. I feel
that's true. That's true. When I get on the old TikToks here. Yeah, so kind of got the evil look to Superman here by looking at him. I mean, this is a fantastic cover, but it's darker than normal. Got some kind of eyes in the chest. And then flames around the wristbands there. So dark look, kind of more of a metal kind of look to it. So setting a interesting tone. Then we open this thing and we find we're getting a little bit more of a blue collar Superman here. He's like, hey, listen, my parents are badasses. I'm from the streets. I'm different now.
Well, what did you think about his catchphrase instead of up, up, and away is now get her done, which I thought was interesting.
Hey, what?
Like a bold take.
Get her done.
Yeah.
What?
He's a tater salad is what we call him from now on.
Pete, you seem a little lost in the weeds here, so why don't we turn it over to Justin. What did you think about this book?
Come out of the weeds, Pete. I think this is great. I like it is of a piece with the other books, but it does have its own sort of tone and what it's going for. Like you're saying, Man of the People, very much like anti-corporate. We got to rise up energy, which matches really well with Superman. It reminds me of some of the good ideas in the Superman movies from the last 20 years that were often not quite landed in the films. But here I feel like it has real potential to land. And it wouldn't be a Superman reboot if you weren't trying to say that the S in Superman means something else.
Yeah.
Something weird. Something where it's like, yeah, my S, very clear S, by the way, should be an S word probably, but it means working class. I'm like, okay.
Means jobs.
Weird rule we've established for Superman that the S means other non-S words.
It means jobs. It's the S in jobs.
Well, I think Jason Aaron is – oh, sorry. Go ahead, Bean.
I was just going to say, to try to land my own ship here, it's a different kind of look. But I was kind of like, what are we doing? Why are we seeing this? But then the twist, when we have kind of Lois arrest him, then I was all in. Then I was just like, oh, here we go. Now
you like handcuff stuff.
Very in on the fact that journalists should be allowed to arrest people, right? Legally?
Yeah. Give them a badge. Camera and a badge.
I have information, and I'm going to arrest you for it. Yeah, I just think that they're making some big swings, but it feels interesting. So even though I've seen this rebooted a ton, I'm still here for it because I feel like they're making some cool twists and turns that aren't just like, hey, S stands for different words now.
The thing that I think this is doing successfully and what Jason Aaron does here that sort of pans out on the whole line is he's doing two things, right? One, he's taking a look at, okay, Krypton exploded an ecological disaster, something that doesn't really get dealt with too much in terms of the Superman mythology. It's more about like, now he's on Earth and he was raised by the Kents. So how do you extrapolate off of that into the way that our modern world is dealing with our own slow ecological disaster? And that's what's coming to bear here in terms of what Superman is fighting. But the other thing is, if you go back to his original 1930s origin, he was fighting for the workers. He was fighting against big business. And that's exactly what he's driving in here. And overall, the reason I think that connects to the overall line is the thing that I was hoping was going to happen with these books that is panning out with these books is they are keeping the core of the characters while revamping everything else about them. And all of these books are about, including this one, Superman is about hope. He is believing in humanity.
That's what the S stands for.
Exactly. And that comes through in Batman and Wonder Woman. You know, I think with Wonder Woman, we talked about her. Justin, I believe you brought up that this is different from the dark multiverse stuff because it's not like stories that failed and they're dark and they're what ifs and they're bad. It's things are bad, but these heroes are fighting through them. And that's what we're getting here. Yes.
Yeah.
Pete. Yeah. I got a couple of questions. First off, do you think it's rude to stare at somebody's chest eyes? You know what I mean? Because it's like, Superman could be like, no, look at my eyes up here. But it's like, I'm sorry, should I be talking to the eyes?
Do you think there's like maybe half the population that deals with that on a daily basis? I don't know.
I'm just wondering if there's a, you know, I'm sure there's a right and wrong here, but I'm not staring at, you know, I'm still trying to find the eyes. You know
what are you talking about? I really don't know what you're talking
about. He has flaming eyes in his chest on this uniform.
Are you talking about the little muscle bits down by his abs?
No, I'm talking about the eyes that are flames on his chest.
All right.
I think you're having a psychotic break.
Maybe let's not stay on this point. What are your other questions?
Well, I was just also wondering, is the wrist flames like changing size depending on his mood and stuff?
Does he get mood sleeves?
Because that would be fun.
I like the development of the costume. I think that's neat. Agreed. And that's going to be fun to follow. And I love the stuff that happens at the end, the little teasers for what's coming up.
That's what I was going to say. I really love when comics launch with these little hints or little points, because I think while it is a great way to sort of tease and set up what's happening, it also, for me, gives us a great just compass direction with a number one in where we're going and what kind of things, especially when we're sort of starting a new universe or on a character that we already know. It gives us a real strong direction into what parts of the mythology we're going to explore. And this is very cool at the end.
All right, why don't we move on? We could probably talk about this for another hour. Instead, let's talk about The Ultimates, number 6 from Marvel, written by Dennis Camp, art by Juan Fregeri. In this issue, the team is finally all assembled, and they are on a mission to do what they think is to save a bunch of superheroes who have been imprisoned by the Maker's Council. Turns out it's a trap. And things go very, very badly for the team. This has been a blockbuster title that I think everybody has been enjoying so far. How'd you feel about this latest issue?
Send me to Dennis Camp for the summer because I'm all in on this stuff. This is great. We get to see this Ultimates team that is a little wobbly, I think we can safely say, and they just get their asses handed to them by a Hulk that is, you know, ice cold, but also devastating, who's got some iron fist hands that he's popping off, wrecking, big moves, a lot of supporting characters in here, tragic end. This feels like it's able to sort of be in this Ultimates story, that's this super story that's sort of hard to get our hands around, we've talked about, while also just being a great superhero comic.
I think if a giant Iron Fist Hulk offers you tea, you take the tea. You know what I mean? You don't try to fight him. I mean, I don't know what everybody's doing.
The tea was poison tea. Does that change anything in your...
Will you drink the poison tea?
Yeah.
I didn't. That seems like that's a lot of work to go through. It seemed like he was just like, hey, can you guys just enjoy some tea with me? And then
a lot of work to poison tea. It's famously easy. You just put something in it.
Well, anyways, I think this is super badass. I mean, having a like Iron Fist level, like cheat out Hulk was crazy fun. Mm-hmm. The fight sequences were insane. They kept raising the stakes. So I agree with you. Dennis Camp is a blast. It's fun to kind of have this type of hype and action and stakes. And then old Daddy Doom saving the day at the end there. That's just fun for everybody. Camp's over.
Oh,
Camp's never
okay,
over. No, that's Pete's sign-off when he's done talking. He's like, camp's over.
Camp's over.
Camp's over.
And well, at that when point, Doom pulls everybody home,
all the way, and everybody's like,
camp's over.
Pete, we need to pack up our sleeping bags.
Camp's over, kids.
There's a lot of stuff that's being balanced very nicely in this issue. And while I think I prefer the more focused issues like the last one, which focused on Hawkeye or the Doctor Doom issue or anything like that, like Pete's saying, huge superhero action, if that's what you're looking for, 100% here. I like the fact that because this is an Ultimate Universe with a ticking time bomb, we have about a year to go before it's all over, it moves into the next stage or whatever's going to happen, that they're able to make big moves with all the characters that you can't necessarily make in a mainstream universe. There's also, you know, they backburner it a little bit, but like, I think it's pretty clear this is a cultural appropriation Hulk. Like, that's the idea, is that he's coming in and being like, ah, yes, I understand your culture, but he's ruling it. He's taking over the immortal weapons, the seven cities of heaven, etc. So that's definitely bubbling there. And there's also, spoiler for a very specific thing, but I can't believe he did this. I think it was the first, no, probably second issue where they did the riff on the "Do you think this A stands for France?" thing from the original Ultimates. Here we got a riff on that awful scene from Ultimatum where Blob eats the Wasp, but then they flip it so it turns out right. And I was like, that's fun. That's a fun little shout out to be like, yes, we are aware of what happened previously in this series. We're coming up with new interesting riffs on it.
The best thing to do is lightly roast the comics that came before you.
Yeah. Well, it's roasting.
It's working.
That's what you do at Dennis Camp. Instead of lightly roasting marshmallows, you lightly roast previous comics.
That's the way. Yum, yum. A s'more of satisfaction. The other thing I was going to say is all these Ultimates issues are like 12 months until the end or whatever. And it really was working on me. I'm like, holy shit, how do they call their shot? And then I'm like, wait, all comics know what's coming about a year away. Mm-hmm. It's just no one says that. Yeah. But this comic's like, we have a plan. And I'm like, yeah, good. You should.
Do you think at some point when Jonathan Hickman was setting this up, he was like, you guys remember that Spawn countdown clock? What if we did that for a full
Exactly.
Ride?
That's so funny. It is real, and it's working. I found the Spawn clock lame. This clock I like. What's that about?
Oh, weird.
Nobody we should do like top five down. Comic book clocks. It's like a video or something.
Oh, sick. Yeah, Miss Dude. Minutes.
Number three. FML.
Camp's Number over.
FML number one from Dark Horse Comics, written by Kelly Sue DeConnick, art by David Lopez. This is the team from Captain Marvel back together on an 8-issue miniseries. There are a wild amount of things happening in this first issue. It takes place in Portland. Did I get that right? It's either Portland or Seattle. I'm sorry, I mixed them up.
Wow. What an East Coaster.
Right. Yeah, whatever, dude.
I don't know. It's somewhere on the West
Coast.
Two
separate places. Come on, bro.
Yeah, they're basically the same. Anyway, there are four kids This is focusing on four kids who are dealing with school shootings being a way of life, climate change being a way of life, everything in the world is terrible. So they retreat into telling each other stories. There's a lot more going on here, and the indication in the final couple of pages that there's even more going on. But I love this book. This was, I think, my favorite issue of the week, I want to say, just in terms of the depth of character that's going on here, the relevance to the outside world, the depth of emotion, but also just the creativity with the comic book form. It keeps breaking in with other formats and other looks in the middle of a page, and I was just impressed across the board.
Agree, like a great use of the form. And, you know, this reminded me a little bit of Grommets, another comic we're reading.
Yeah,
of like sort of a capturing a moment in time at a place in time. This one takes some other twists and turns in a fun way, but agree with Alex, really enjoyed this.
Yeah, this is definitely my in my top three of the week. This is awesome. I had a blast with this. Love the color. Love the different... love the kind of just the back and forth here. You really feel the friendship and the history. I just had a blast with this.
It's in my top three of ones we've talked about so far. That's for sure. The three we've talked about.
Wow. All right. Why don't we move on to talk about JSA number one from DC Comics, written by Jeff Lemire, art by Diego Olortegui. This is a pretty big, bold reinvention of the team because mild spoilers here, but I think they've talked about this. The JSA, the main JSA, is somewhere else where we pick up, and Infinity Inc., the younger version of the team, is stepping in as the de facto JSA. There's twists, there's turns, there's fights. I really loved how this book jumped into the middle of the action where it felt like, I don't know, issue four, issue five, instead of issue one. That was just very impressive to me.
There's a couple of books in our stack today that I was like, wow, way to hit the ground running. Mm-hmm. And this one definitely felt that way. Sort of a darker tinge. JSA is always like the big, bright, shiny heroes of the past. Nostalgia. This feels a little bit the opposite of that, but in a good way. And JSA is one of my favorite sort of teams, and I'm happy to see it back in a new way.
Just to finish up what I was trying to say about the last comic, I love the art style and the maps and different stuff. Very kind of unique and cool. Okay, maps. So with this, maps. Forgot about maps. I really like the start of this.
I'll back up what Pete's saying. The back matter is very fun at FML.
Yes, thank you. I thought this was a great start. Liked what Alex was saying about how it started in the middle of action. We did have to sit through a couple of meetings, though, where I was like, I do that enough in real life. I don't want to – JSA is cool, but I don't need to sit in on meetings. I thought the cool twist at the end was great. Fun kind of spoiler with the reveal, the evil JSA. So, yeah, I'm into it. I feel like can't wait to read the next issue. Love the art style.
They're about to, is the big spoiler for you, Pete, that they're about to have a meeting that you have to sit in on?
I hope I don't. Even evil meetings, I don't want to sit in on them.
You know? So let me say, you're checking your email, and you get a Zoom invite from a Punisher. You're like, oh, no, how could I go talk to that guy?
Well, I mean, if it's a Zoom invite, yeah. All right, kind of.
Oh, look at you! Oh, look how you're happy now. Yeah. It cheered
Did
you
it
up.
Happen? Pete just checked his email. I saw it happen.
Pete, you're blushing. It's like you're falling in love with this idea.
You got me.
Good book. Next up, Aliens versus Avengers number 2 from Marvel, written by Jonathan Hickman, art by Asad Rubish. In the previous issue, all the plans to stop the xenomorphs who have invaded Earth have failed, and so this issue, as we suspected, the old guy who is covered in iron armor is, in fact, Tony Stark, Iron Man.
Oh,
I know.
Oh, wow. And he makes so obvious now.
Decision to leave Earth, to evacuate Earth. We also get a lot of information filled in here. And I'll tell you what, this is definitely jumping into spoilers, but man, if you love Prometheus and if you love Alien Covenant, your time has come with this comic book.
Yeah.
This is going deep. We've seen very little xenomorph horror and lots of shaved-headed dudes being weird. So depending on which side of the alien mythology you're in on, this book is either for you or not for you.
Well, yet. What did you expect, though? Like, this is Jonathan Hickman. Jonathan Hickman hearing that there are engineers in another franchise being like, oh, you know I'm doing that. Oh, that's
going exactly.
Great.
He's like, every one of his books has like shaved headed dudes who are running shit secretly. So like, yeah, I know he's going that way. But that's not to say I'm not being critical of this because I really like this. I like how far down the death spiral of society the story starts. You don't usually get that with an alien story, usually starting with like, hey, what's this weird egg? Oh, no. So that's cool. And the aliens are definitely more of a sort of force of nature or the bullet being shot from a gun here rather than an actual thing that you have to fight with your hands. But I like that I guess we're seemingly splitting up our team a little bit here in a way that seems interesting. I'm curious if we're going to follow both sides of it. And the art is perfect for this book.
Yes, thank you. That's where I wanted to start. I mean, this is an epic start to this. The first panel, just fantastic. Love the art, setting the tone, setting the theme. Hardly in the words on the first couple of panels, which is great. Ease us into this kind of world. I just feel like this is some cold ass futuristic scary shit here. And then Tony leaves early. I hate when if you're counting and you say you gotta count to 10 and hide and go see, you gotta go to 10. You can't launch early. Give your team a chance to kind of make it back to the ship, Tony. You're being fucking selfish and it's ridiculous. But
people who cheat at counting is really bothering Pete this week. Yeah, for anyone listening to our other podcast,
it's a real, you know, I mean, give Captain America a chance and Hulk. I mean, that was just, but this is very epic and it's really such a cool tale to be telling with these two properties. So it's really impressive what this is going down.
Yeah. There were multiple moments where I was like, oh shit, while reading this book, it's fantastic. And I normally hate this kind of thing, but it really is helpful. If you watch Prometheus, if you watch Alien Covenant, you watch all of the Alien movies to understand this, like almost more so than Avengers stuff. But
yeah, I would almost argue you sort of have to know,
right?
You have to have seen Prometheus, I think, to get at least some of what's happening here.
Right. Well, and the beginning of this comic is the, I believe, beginning of Alien Covenant as well. So, or maybe it was the middle. I honestly don't remember. But there's scenes where Jonathan Hickman is finding his own riff on it there. It's wild. Wild that this comic exists.
You earned a degree in the behavioral health field because you wanted to make a difference. And you're needed now more than ever. Through the new Great Minds Fellowship Program, recent Ohio graduates may be able to receive as much as $20,000 in student loan support when working full-time at a community behavioral health center. Apply before November 15th. To learn more about program eligibility, visit highered.ohio.gov. That's highered.ohio.gov.
Build up to Black Friday with savings all month long at Lowe's. Get up to 50% off select major appliances, plus take an additional 10% off when you buy select major appliances. And don't wait to pick up holiday inflatables under $20. Don't wait to save in-store or online now, because Lowe's knows deals. Valid 11/6 through 12/4. Cannot be combined with additional discounts. See Lowe's.com for details and qualifying items while supplies last.
Yeah. Living Hell, number one from Dark Horse Comics by Caitlin Yarsky. This is Caitlin Yarsky's first creator-owned work that she is writing and drawing herself. And it's about a guy who is a demon who has escaped from hell and is finding himself sucked back into that life against his will, despite building a family around him. I always am blown away by Caitlin Yarsky's art, but I was also really blown away by her writing in this issue, too. This is a really fun, interesting setup. There's some real emotional stakes, some interesting mythology. Great debut first issue here.
Yeah, I really agree. I was super impressed by this. It's heartbreaking, but it's beautiful at the same time. We got a very intriguing cover here. They do a great job of setting up an idea and really delivering. The last line is just so badass where it's like, and that's how we came. The Shepherd. I was like, oh, shit. Oh, I'm in. This is great.
Yeah. Do you ever say that, like, when you see somebody with a bunch of sheep and he's like, and that's how I became the shepherd. And you're like,
oh, man, anytime you see a shepherd, they've got a crazy story about how they became a shepherd. Like, dude, some badass dude. Man. Yeah. Because it's not, you know, when you it's a hard job herding sheep. You
put them first off, you're falling asleep. Not a lot of people know this, but like 90% of shepherds are like straight up Jason Stathams. They are. Yeah. You think of them as sort of like these old guys with the hook canes or whatever. No way, man. They're the beekeeper, the transporter. They're the shepherd. Anyway, I think we effectively talked about this comic book.
I like this comic as well. Sorry, chaos is unfolding around me in my home.
That's right. All good. Definitely pick this one up. Next up, Batgirl, number one from DC Comics, written by Tate Brabel, art by Takeshi Miyazawa. This surprised me, this book.
Same. Maybe. I kept having to go back and be like, what issue is this? One?
Yeah. Well, we talked about this because I assume this is one of the ones that you were referring to, Justin.
Yes. This comic throws you so hard in the action, I couldn't believe this was a number one. I was like, was there a zero I missed? And maybe it was the all in. Like, does all in mean it's you're in? It's you're starting. Yeah. There's no.
Starting in the middle. Yeah.
Yeah. But I will say I like this. Cassandra Cain is. Obviously, we have our Batgirl rankings. You guys are ranking everything that's stacked. Barbara Gordon, great Batgirl. But Cassandra Cain is like a very different Batgirl, but I really love her character and I always want to get more into it. I feel like we've gotten a little bit of her origin that feels the same. We've told that same story a couple times. I'm excited that this might go a little deeper in it and really put us in her head as we're learning about her life in this series.
Yeah, I agree with the JT Sizzle here. This is a cool story, and I'm really impressed with not only how it's being told, but this is great to see this kind of mother-daughter team up, the kind of putting her in a different position than we've seen her, acting differently than we've seen, but also the familiar, like, just whooping ass. Just straight up kicking so much ass. I'm having a blast with this. The art is fantastic. Love the pace of this. A lot of action. You're getting a lot of bang for your buck here in this comic. This is a fantastic number one.
Just to dive further into it, because I don't think we've said it yet, this is one big action scene. It starts right before the action scene in one setting and then follows that through, and it's not over by the end of the first issue. So I was very intrigued by this. I thought this was a very bold beginning for the book, but I need a better sense of what it is as a series versus a mini series. Because, you know, if they sold this as like six issues of nonstop action and it's just one action scene, great, I get it. But what is this like in maybe this comic book atmosphere where things get canceled at issue 4 or 5 or whatever? But what is this like at issue 10, at issue 20? I'm just not sure yet, like, what the mission statement is, though it's well-written and well-drawn throughout.
But I do think that is maybe the point, that it's not telling you the mission. It's sort of like, hey, the mission started. Hurry up. Go do your part of your mission.
Yeah, I guess we'll see. I'm certainly willing to follow it further. Cahorty, Reshaper of Worlds, number one from Marvel, by Ryan Little, Todd Harris, Arahani Hani David, David Cutler, Kelly Lynn D'Angelo, and Jim Terry. Let's bring the character from the animated series What If from the MCU into comic book continuity, thrusting her into the 616 and teaming her up with Daredevil and Echo, and then Moon Knight, or rather Moon Knights, before sending her back to her own world. With the promise of more to come. I think we were all really positive about the Cordy episode of What If. How do you think it worked in comic book form?
This was great to see. I was super, not only a fantastic cover, fantastic art, loved the style of the story, kind of like how we kind of learned something as we kind of got to spend more time with her. Felt very old school to me. I loved it. I had a blast with this.
I like this as well. The way that it felt like an old school comic, I think, Pete, you're saying, like we dove through a couple bits of reality here.
Yeah.
We get a nice new take. I was like, Moon Knight, huh? Interesting that he's here, multiples here. But I like the sort of way it was woven into Kahori's background. It is funny to me that Moon Knight he's like, I'm mystical And grappling hooks is also my thing. And that's what he does. He uses
mystical
here.
Mystical and practical, man. I mean, best of both worlds. What, do you what have a combo,
man.
With?
Yeah, come on. Ideal partner alert. Mystical yeah, right? and practical. Let's come go. On. But yeah, I want a sort of a more ongoing story, I think, here. Mm-hmm. What's something that Kahori can actually have as her mission statement?
I agree with that last part. Overall, I like this, and I'm glad they did this. I would love to see more of yeah. her in the Marvel comics, and I like the character. But the parts that I think were a little wobbly about the episode were, I'm forgetting the name of the character, but it was the one character in Skyworld who was like, wow, Kahorty, you're the best, Kahorty. You can do anything, Kahorty. We love you, Kahorty. And I was like, just let us like her while we're watching her, which we already do. Calm down a little bit. And yeah. there was a little bit of that in this issue as well, as the character's like, sure hope I'm going to see her again. What a great character. And then at the end, she's like, who knows who we might meet the next time. And I was like,
yeah,
right,
it felt very old school down. That way, where they were doing the old, like, yeah, we don't think yeah. you have a memory at all. We're going to say your name a couple more times.
Yeah, and again, the adventures are fun. I agree with you on the Moon Knight thing, and it makes a lot of sense to bring in Daredevil and Echo as well, but I could have dialed that part down a little bit. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, it's true.
It's still great.
The Fade, number one for Boom Studios, written by Abria Iyengar, art by Marie Costa. This is about, I think this is like a sci-fi fantasy type world, is the best way of describing it, where there yeah. is an alternate world called the Fade that people can access, and one girl ultimately, no, not a huge spoiler, but ends up there. Big debut issue. What'd you guys think about this one?
Well, this was cool. My favorite thing about this was the way the blending of realities that happens mm-hmm. in this mm-hmm. is really, you know, it seems easy to do that, and a lot of comics do that. I thought this comic did a great job of making it seamless and having us as the reader sort of fall into it in the same way the main character is throughout. So great use of the form, I would say. A fun art. And, you know, we don't know a ton about what's happening yet, but I'm excited to see where it is.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of have all the same notes as Justin here. Yeah, I loved the fact of we didn't get anything over-explained. It wasn't like, this is how traveling through time works, or this is this world. It was just the reality, and we got to see it, how they kind of used it. But yeah, I mean, fantastic cover. Love the vibe of this art. Set up this kind of magical world that we could flow between in a way that really worked and made sense. Yeah, and they did a good enough job of giving us enough to get us excited about more, but, you know, not giving us over-explaining anything. So I feel like this was a fantastic first issue. Can't wait to read number two.
Little Batman, month one, number one for DC Comics, written by Morgan Evans, art by John McKell. This is spinning off the hit animated movie that was on Prime Video, picking up after that, where we get a revamped Damian Wayne hanging out with his dad, Batman, who has a beard here. So I think the three of us love that. We all have beards.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Really identify with Batman. Anyway, in this...
Gotta chafe that cape and cowl.
Yes. You know? So if you missed the movie, the idea was that Batman had cleaned up all crime in Gotham, and then it comes out over one night on Christmas. There's sort of a diehard situation, except with Damian Wayne. They beat the Joker, so crime seems to be cleaned up once again, and Damian's a little frustrated about it, this issue, until... once again, there's more crime that happens. What'd you guys think about this one?
Well, I mean, we got to talk a little bit. It seems like this kid is addicted to crime. And, you know,
fighting crime?
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. And he needs crime to feel alive.
In a way, that's you're addicted to crime if you're fighting it. You know?
Well, I mean, but when you the have crime to... is gone and he's not okay, you know, that's when you really worry about him unraveling. You know what I mean? And, yeah, no, this is just adorable fun. It's just the art is fantastic. It's such a kind of like lighthearted, but also very specific. So it's really kind of unique and cool and super adorbs. And yeah, I mean, you know what you're getting into, and it really delivers.
Agree. The art is really nice. It's such an easy to read book, lighthearted with a little bit of heart, though, at the end, especially following young and tiny Batmite-sized Damian Wayne, who doesn't dress as Robin, but dresses as a little Batman.
I maybe like this better than the movie. I generally enjoyed the movie. I thought it was fun. Full disclosure, I used to work with Morgan back in the day at MTV, and I think you guys have done comedy stuff with him.
Yes,
right?
I know Morgan.
Yeah. I like the movie. I like what they did with it. But this really hit the ground running. It feels straight up like a sequel to the movie. It's very charming. You don't really need to know anything about the movie to jump into it. Animation. The art style perfectly matches it and channels the movie as well. So very fun. Good debut. And I'm looking forward to reading more.
Bring on month two.
Bring on month two. Negasonic Teenage Warhead, number one. The Marvel, written by Andrew Wheeler, art by Eleonora Carlini and Carola Borelli. This is collecting the digital series that was on Marvel Unlimited that gave Negasonic Teenage Warhead her own mission, sort of separate from Deadpool. He certainly shows up here quite a bit, as she needs to find a girl that she has never met before in 1 hour and kiss her, or the entire universe is going to be destroyed. Pete, you seem pretty excited about this one, so take it away.
That's my every New Year's Eve, man. It's it's hectic but true. I mean, yeah, this is it's great to see Negasonic Teenage Warhead getting her own book here. Exciting, fun cover. I think this is a blast. I was hoping to get less Deadpool and we could get more of her, but
Pete say that.
We're going to work that out. I feel like once hopefully this takes off, she'll be able to get more of that. But yeah, this is just exciting. You know what I mean? This is new comics getting new characters a chance here. So yeah, this is fun and cool and fantastic art.
I think like you said, Alex, was a digital comic first. And I think you do feel the chapterization of it pretty hard here. Not that that's necessarily bad. I sort of like the fact that Deadpool kicks it off and then we do leave him behind pretty hard. It made for more space for NTW to really pop. And the breadth of this,
NTW,
the way this story expands to become a cosmic level threat, I thought was cool. And the use of so many other Marvel heroes, the all-female team of heroes that sort of serve as careful things that Negasonic Teenage Warhead has to watch out for while at the same time helping her. I thought it was really cool.
Yeah, I agree with all that. I really like the cameos in particular, and I agree with you that you could feel the digital to page a bit. But still, if you did miss it digitally, like I did, it is a story well worth picking up. Something is Killing the Children, number zero, from Boom Studios, written by James Tynion IV, art by Werther Del Maria. And Pete, you are cheering JT4 for a zero issue.
This has made me question everything. I've realized I've been the asshole the whole time.
What? Show over. End it here. It's not getting better than this. We're good.
Yeah.
Camp's over.
Camp's canceled. I just feel like there's no way this is an actual zero issue because there's so much that happens here and it's so important. I feel like they're just fucking with us numbering wise because this is the least zero amount of issue that I've ever read, but it is a zero issue. So I guess I've been wrong this whole time because I love, this was my other of my top three. This is in here because this is just unbelievable. I mean, so much goes down on this issue. The art's just glorious. I mean, this is so intense, but great. I love all the amazing characters and the twists and turns that we get here. This is just, this comic is glorious. I don't know what you're doing. You got to read this fucking comic.
It's funny. I feel like we've been getting in the main numbering, I guess we could say, of this story, standalone adventures for the last, three or four issues. This one feels like it's like, oh, yeah, you've been missing out on some other story. Bang! Here comes a lot of it all at once with the zero. Sort of strange that this is a zero issue. I agree with Pete. This is the least zero of zero issues maybe ever. So no wonder it was able to pierce Pete's harsh hate of our favorite round little number, zero.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a zero issue because it's jumping back before the beginning of the series to show how Erica Slaughter ended up in Archer's Peak. It's giving also, per the point that you guys are making, is jumping forward to show what is coming next, all the bad stuff that is coming for her over the next, probably, I want to say 50 issues and maybe even more, something like that. So that's very exciting. This is a must pickup and good as this title always is. Next up, another big one, Batman 154 from DC Comics, written by Chip Zdarsky, art by Carmine D. Giandomenico. In this issue, Batman is investigating a dead body, specifically the dead body of the mayor, I believe, who has been killed, and trying to figure out who did it. Is it the Riddler? Is it another weird guy who's popped up in Gotham and is rich? Well, we find out by the end of the issue, and it broke Pete's heart, I'm sure.
Yeah, this, I was having a great time until the twist here. And I don't know if we should spoil it, but I was booing this comic. I was like, fuck you. Fuck
you
that.
You boo a comic?
Yeah, I'll boo a comic. I'm not scared of it. I'll do it. I'll it doesn't matter if there's people around, I'll do it. I was heartbroken. I didn't see it coming. I don't like this. Whatever, I'll wait for this to wash out, and then I'll...
Wash out? What's happening, Pete? You're booing comics? You're trying to wash it out?
I'm just saying, like, all right, I'll pick it back up once you've fixed this.
I mean, you're going to read the next issue, so there is that.
That's true, I will, but yeah. I won't like it.
Yeah, nice. You're going to let it wash out of your brain. I think this is great. I love the way Chip Zdarsky is just approaching Batman.
Oh, you like it when there's an evil Commissioner Gordon? Is that what you like?
Hey, the man makes mistakes. Mm-hmm. You know, he does one here.
We've been in this together for years.
Are you talking about the three of us or you and Commissioner Gordon?
I said they've been.
Oh, okay. I thought you said we've been.
When you have friends like this, Pete, like we are, one of them is eventually going to kill someone, and one of us is going to kill someone, and the other two will have to reckon with that. Or one, if that person is the victim, is probably one of us too. Let's be honest. We are a murder podcast in the making. Good luck solving that one.
To put out there. Why are you like, somebody's listening to this being like, well, I needed three assholes to murder. This guy's practically begging me for it.
We should change the name of the podcast to Only Comics in the Building. How about that?
Oh, that's fun. Then that's true about my house. What I was going to say is I love the way Chip Zdarsky is targeting the Batman sort of meta narrative and finding little cracks and opening them up. It's what I think so much of every writer of the last like 15 years has done on Daredevil, and bringing that sensibility here where it's like, there's a way to shake this up that hasn't been done before. I'm going to find it and do it. And I think that's great. And Chip's been doing a great job with this, I think.
X-Men number 7 from Marvel, written by Jed McKay, art by Netho Diaz. In this issue, we jump back to the Iron Knight to find out how the X-Men came to stay in Alaska. Ooh. What's going on with the frozen wild Sentinel there. We also get a bit of a hint about what's been going on with Magneto, as we also, by the end of the issue, set up the first crossover between the new X-Men and Uncanny X-Men in the Assault on Gray Malkin storyline that's coming soon. So lots of business. And Pete, as we found out, doesn't like business earlier in this episode.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had a blast with this. I, first off, love the cover. This was a fantastic cover. And this is a fun idea. Team up these two assholes together. Cyclops and Magneto, great. Yes, two of you guys.
Wait, is this a sarcastic review? Are you being sarcastic the whole time? Because you can't do that. You can't just be sarcastic.
What are you talking about? I think putting two assholes together cancels each other out. It's great. They can just bitch about their lives, and you don't know what a leader is. I loved it. I thought it was great and fun. And yeah, like have them complaining and then go take down a Sentinel together. I thought this was great. I had a blast.
So your ideal movie isn't like Crazy Cop and Regular Cop get teamed up. It's like two crazy cops get teamed up and they are just annoying the whole time. You want to see like all Mel Gibson Lethal Weapon?
Sounds racist. I'd rather not see it.
Yes, exactly. Sure. It escalates quickly to just straight up racism. It's interesting the way that that Jed McKay's sort of telling the story. We're getting a lot of important information here in issue 7 as to why sort of how Cyclops and Magneto are just like, let's crush beers, bro, and then things spin out of on my porch.
Wolverine does.
Imagine inviting Magneto over and all you have is canned beer. Mm-hmm. Like, come on, man. Scott,
glass
set up.
Bottles. He could stab you with that stuff. I continue to be all right with this. Like, I like Netho Diaz's art. I like his designs for the characters. There's, as usual, Jed McKay knows what he's doing when he writing comic books, so there's interesting character dynamics here. But I continue to be relatively uninterested in the central mysteries of the book, like revealing that the Iron Knight, or like what happened with that Wild Sentinel, well, we beat it pretty easily, is not much of an answer there.
I agree with you there. The book does feel a little wobbly, mm-hmm. and since it's such a big relaunch, it seems strange that it's like a little uncertain of where it's going.
Yeah.
But the more information we get, the more I do like it. So I'm hoping we'll continue on that path. The book really is focusing on Edie a lot, but we don't really know why yet. So that's interesting. I also like the idea that the way the Krakoan regeneration stuff is having a cost. There's a cost to what they did that here we see with Magneto. That's an interesting take.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Night Watcher, number 3 from IDW, written by Judy Ba, art by Pharaoh Pei. Jenica is the new vigilante on the streets. We don't really refer to the fact that she is wearing a sentient suit of armor in this issue necessarily.
Weird.
Yes. Positive weird.
Positive weird.
Yeah.
Well, we got the backstory last issue on that, and I was like, huh.
Yeah, and then we don't deal with it at all this issue. Instead, we focus on a mutant who she is trying to save from a hate mob. Really well done issue of this, but given the revelation of issue 2, I'm curious why we're not jumping more
into the magic armor part.
Yeah.
Well, you'll get there. We'll get there. You know what I mean? Come on.
I disagree with that. I think it's like, no, we told that story. No more explanation needed.
Wow. Really?
It's just magic armor, bro.
Wow.
That she's wearing that has its own personality and stuff. Okay.
If you think they're going to go back and
if you
be
were
like,
wearing a person to this podcast, that becomes the main question that I have going forward every podcast.
My beard is a symbiote. This is a venom.
Great.
Situation.
You've explained it. I have no further questions. No,
see?
I would keep asking about it. I'd keep asking about it all the
Mine's
time.
Mine's an anti-venom. It kind of is a little. It's a
That's why yours is
shape.
So white, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Nice.
Mine's gotcha. Scream.
Ooh,
yeah.
Boo.
Oh, good. Let's start. Let's go around and keep naming symbiotes. How far can we get? I got Carnage left in the chamber, and then I'm out. I'm out.
Yeah, I thought this was fun. I liked how we're kind of dealing with the mutant issue a little bit here, so that was cool. Also, I thought it had a nice deep ending. I like when the TMNT, you know, talks about bigger issues. You know, it's like, don't lose yourself. You know what I mean? You got to try to be
in the music.
True with who you are.
That's really nice. And what a great message to leave this review of this issue on, Pete. But I would also say Jenica's maybe my
but
favorite turtle.
You're not
going
to let me do
no,
that.
No, I'm not no. done talking. No, sorry, okay, I have to let my beard have equal time. Jenica's my favorite turtle.
Hell see yeah, dude. That's fun.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought great. You were going to be mad about that.
No, she's
dude,
great.
I mean,
she's great.
As long as
I
you're liking turtles.
Character. It's really good stuff.
Yeah.
Let's move on, though. Talk about Birds of Prey, number 15 from DC Comics, written by Kelly Thompson, art by Sammy Basri. We've got another Cassandra Cain-focused book as she has infiltrated a secret organization and the Birds of Prey can't quite move in to save her. We are following some bad stuff going down in her location while the rest of the Birds of Prey hang back and interact. Great issue of this comic. I really like the art throughout. Really like the story. This is good stuff. But what did you guys think?
Yeah, I agree. This was just continues to be such a blast. Badass cover. Fantastic issue. Love the last page. Very excited about what's next. Just amazing art. Amazing story. This continues to deliver on such a great level. Yeah, yes, please. More. Thank you.
This book is in my top one of one in the stack for my reviews of this week. I really love this book. The art is great. There's, you know, sort of subtle differences in each arc, I feel like, in the way the art is moving. And it's fun. It's a great team book. It's a great superhero title. The characters are really well thought out. I think we're in a Kelly Thompson renaissance right now.
Hell yeah.
Cool. Venom War number four. I agree with you, by the way. That was a weird way of responding.
Yeah, I thought you sounded mad.
No, yeah, I love like... Kelly Thompson. She's awesome. Venom War number four from Marvel, written by Al Ewing, art by Iben Coelho. In this issue, if you love Goop, boy, is there a lot of Goop going on.
Goop
in
it.
If you love Eddie Brock, there's at least three Eddie Brocks in this issue alongside Dylan Brock. This is too much, man.
Wow. It's interesting. Do you feel like you can watch the Venom movie in theaters and just dive right into this issue?
That was exactly what I was going to bring up. Is like,
whoa.
Not that a lot of people saw Venom 3 and were like, I got to check out the comics, because most people saw Venom 3 and were like, what else is going on with my day? I guess I have a colonoscopy. That sounds better. But
wow.
Imagining trying to be like, hey, real quick, check out Venom War number four. And even myself, a comic book reader, understanding what's going on, when Carnage is like, do you want to take all blood, the Necro Spear? I'm like, this is cool, but also, what is happening here?
Yeah, it's crazy that the Venom movie is happening at the same time this is happening. Two things that make that are named the same are make no sense in wildly different ways, or are doing weird things in very different directions, these two projects. But I will say there is a lot going on here, but it's done in a fun way. Like the Necrospear line you just quoted, Alex, which I know you're going to be quoting for the rest of the year, probably.
Time,
for
sure. Probably.
Best line of the year.
Time.
Is really, it's done in like a fun, almost like campy way. A word that I think people overuse, but this has like comic book camp going on. And we were just naming symbiotes, which is a hard or very easy game show that I think we should pitch. Because simultaneously, it's hard to remember them all. But also, if you name any noun, there's probably a symbiote named that.
Oh, boy. Take it easy with all that. Yeah, this is just like the cover. It's a giant Venom-type battle. Yeah, I mean, the anti-Venom gets some fun Zen moments in here. But this is insane. It's Goop all over the Goop in place. But it's also a fun kind of insanity. So there's a lightness to it that is kind of cool. Plus the Venom horse at the end. I mean, if you're not having Goopy fun by then, I don't know what to tell you.
The Venom horse one-pagers are fantastic. I love every single one of those.
A lot of people want regular horses to just be covered in Goop. Mm-hmm. So get ready for a Goopy Kentucky Derby. I'll tell you that much.
Duck and Cover, number three from Dark Horse Comics, written by Scott Snyder, art by Raphael Albuquerque. This is the final issue of this title, at least for now, which found a bunch of kids surviving an alien attack by hiding under their desks. And now they're first hiding out and then fighting back against the aliens. Great end to the series. Super fun.
Yeah.
Versus Absolute Superman, like we talked about. I'm glad that Raphael Albuquerque was able to draw this title because his art is phenomenal here. Really good stuff.
I have a very dumb comment. If you're a big fan of American Vampires, you're going to love this book. And that's dumb because it's the same team. But I really do think that this has a similar type of storytelling. It has a similar vibe. It's really, if you're not already picking this up as a fan of Scott and Raphael's earlier work, this is definitely something to read. It's a great story. This really brought home all the action and nostalgia at the same time.
It really bothers me that you set that up by saying dumb and then said something smart afterwards. It really makes me mad.
Gotcha.
Dumb. Just saying it's dumb because it's like, if you like pizza, you know what you might also like is other pizza.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
But there's more. I'm just saying there's more in common between these two pizzas 100%. Than you might think.
Yes, absolutely.
There's nothing dumb about that. Anyways, this is a blast of an action movie. This is just so much fun and the great combination of story and art that meets perfectly here. I mean, the Kirky and the SS Snyder are just unbelievable. Just unbelievable.
You're trying too hard. You're trying too hard.
Yeah, I am.
You're nicknaming like crazy.
I'm going names crazy, but I this is just a blast. This is an absolute blast of a comic and definitely worth checking out.
Next up, curious to hear what Pete thinks about this one. Green Arrow 2024 annual number one from DC Comics, written by Joshua Williamson, art by Sean Isaacs and Amon K. Nahulpin. This is bringing to a close Joshua Williamson's run on the title as old man Green Arrow bonds with his extended group of grandchildren and other hangers-on to tell a lost story from throughout his history. I thought this was great. I thought this was a really good issue that really embraced the full history of Green Arrow. It's a fun story. It turned out very nicely at the end, and ends with a sweet little note.
I agree with you. I like this. I feel like Green Arrow's been just constantly reinventing himself in the comic for the last like couple of years. So this was a great sort of bookend to that. I think I'm ready for Green Arrow to do something different now. Mm-hmm. I think we've examined it. I also think it's funny that he has a team of people who all have the same weapon. Just like, all right, let's get him. We'll probably shoot arrows at him to get him.
Yeah.
Makes sense, right,
fam? There is one character in this issue is like, I don't have arrows. Can I have an arrow?
Yeah, that's good. And you came to the right place if you like arrows, because we got him. I had to take a step back today, and I was like, when I was reading this, and was like, oh man, I hope Pete's forgiven Green Arrow. And I was like, what the fuck am I saying? What am I thinking? I hope Pete's forgiven Green Arrow. Okay, I think that. That's weird.
Yeah, this was just like, this guy, it's insane to me that you're going to go and vacation with your family on this island where you were trapped and abandoned and almost died and was full of booby traps and all sorts of things. But now you're just going to be an old man telling stories in this place like it's a vacation home. Okay, whatever. I'm still not over it, so I can't enjoy this very sweet issue. It seems like this guy shouldn't be in charge of this family. He's a loose cannon and has no fucking morals.
You haven't forgiven Green Arrow. Wow. And never will. Arrow, your favorite thing.
It's too soon.
Too TV soon. And, come back to me, knowing you, come back to me in 15 years. It'll still be too soon. You're going to hold on to this for the rest of your natural life, Pete.
That's Pete's last true. Words, fuck Green Arrow. Camp's over. Camp's
over. X-Factor number 4 from Marvel, written by Mark Russell, art by Bob Quinn. In this issue, the team is going to the center of the Earth to rescue some scientists and dealing with some interpersonal relationships at the same time. What did you guys think about this one?
No, nothing. Well,
try not to jump in if you wanted to say something.
I guess I should know if there's an X in the title. You don't want to go first.
Nope. X not going to give it to Pete is what I'll say.
Yes. Oh, wow. I mean, I like this title. I like that it's the tone of it is really strong and that the one and done adventures feel good. And this one had sort of a weird romance at the center that felt a little odd. But in general, I think more comics should be this type of like fun little edge with that are sort of one and done, but ongoing threads of sort of media criticism and why do we do anything feels like an undertone of this story, which is you don't see that a lot in comics.
I agree with Alex, I agree with Justin, where this is a fun.
I agree with Alex. Silence.
Silence is golden.
Nothing.
I think that this is a great kind of story arc. We get to see an idea really played out here. You know, it's this kind of classic issue of stepping up, teamwork, all this kind of fun stuff. No,
silence.
And then,
really paid off like that silence call. Yeah,
so it's a good freezing up his camera. I'll jump in then and say that generally speaking, I don't know. I'm having a hard time holding on to this title, honestly. Like,
yeah, I hear you.
I like this team. I like Mark Russell. I like Bob Quinn, but I'm not quite sure what it is yet. It's not leaning too hard on the satirical bent. It's not leaning too hard on the emotional team dynamics bent. It's sort of straddling it right now, and I wanted to choose a lane and go for it. And I know certainly, like, I love Mark Russell's more satirical stuff, so I want it to go in that direction, but I don't want to force it. I guess we'll see. We'll see what happens.
Yeah.
All right. Why don't we jump over to Public Domain number 10 from Image Comics by Chip Zdarsky. This is a big issue. Spoilers for the last issue of the title. We ended up finding out that our main character, Sid Dallas, I believe it's Sid Dallas, right? Is that or Sid Dallas? No, Sid Dallas is the other guy. Whatever it is, our main character's wife cheated on him with his editor. So lots of big emotional stuff going down there. This issue, we jump back in time to see just how that happened, looping back up to the present. And this is great. This is just a great character piece. It really unveils a lot about all three of these characters. It dives into comic book history. I continue to be very, very impressed with this story overall.
Yeah, great characters. And we talked about this a little bit in the context of going to New York Comic Con with this book sort of in our heads, how much this book feels like almost a documentary about being in comics that's going on underneath, just a great story between all these different characters. And that is that feeling for me is only getting more intense. I feel like this is just like sitting down and talking to an old timer comic book person and just hearing stories about how stuff went down. So if you are at all interested in that, this book is great. Plus interesting characters doing fun and funny things.
Cool. Why don't we jump forward and talk about Plastic Man No More, number 3 from DC Comics, written by Christopher Cantwell, art by Alex Linz. In this issue, Plastic Man is still trying to save the life of his son by blowing up a nuclear bomb, essentially. So he's delving into villainy quite hard here. What do you think about this?
Well, just on that, like in this story, he's gooping. He's gooping out, and he needs to blow up a nuclear bomb to harden his plastic, I guess, and for his son, who will eventually have this happen to him. And his son's like, you can't set off a nuclear bomb. He's like, don't worry, I'm doing it down by the docks. I'm like, by the docks? That's not far enough away.
No.
If there's a dock there, that's too close to humans. You need to go into the desert or something. I do like this. I think the art's really nice. The most interesting part to me is, I guess, two parts. Watching Plastic Man sort of become a villain. He started as a villain, as we sort of set up in the first two issues, and just sort of fall back into that, I think is a nice arc that we don't see a lot in stories in comics that I think will get hopefully a redemption in the next couple issues or next issue. So that's cool. And then secondarily, the Plastic Man, when he's with the Justice League and they're being shitty, is really fun and sad at the same time. There's a moment in this where he's like, they're in a meeting, he's trying to explain why the Metal Men died. And Batman's like, should we get sushi, Superman, or what's the deal? And that's hilarious.
And heartbreaking. Yeah, I feel like there's this kind of weird dark tone to this that rubs me the wrong way. But artistically, this is really cool and impressive. I like what's happening. I like the Detective Chimp stuff. But yeah, it's grown on me. The more this ticks on, the more it's grown on me.
Because you're saying Plastic Man needs to be fun all the time.
I'm not trying to label Plastic Man. You know what I mean? He can be what he wants to be, but I don't like the darker, weirder, you know what I mean? I don't want to be worried about Plastic Man. You know what I mean?
So you do want him to be fun all the time?
Nope.
Just to be clear.
Nope. No, that's not what I
said. You just don't want to worry about him, don't want to think about him doing anything that's not fun. Because you're like the Justice League.
I mean, that's positive. That's a positive thing you ended on there. Why don't we talk about...
Like the Justice League,
Let's
Pete.
Talk about a team that I always refer to as the Justice League of Marvel, the Avengers, number 20.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, no, I've never heard that before. Pointed that out before. Written by Jen
They're
McKay.
Different, though, Alex. They're
I
different.
I don't think so. It's the same thing. It's interchangeable. Art by Fareed Karami.
How dare
In
you.
Fact, this is very different because we are following the solo adventure of Black Panther as he goes into the whatchamacallit that is in the thingy that the Avengers are living in. And
Alex, are you talking about the Impossible City and how they took down the Ashen Combine?
Yeah.
Is that what you're trying to say, Alex?
But what did he go into again? The Meridius Temporal?
Yes, he's in. Yes. He's fighting Meridius.
Yeah.
Alex, it's obvious with these names.
They spell it out for you and everything.
I'm so sorry, everybody. I really apologize. Anyway, Black Panther is going into this former prison and trying to free it over the course of the issue. So very much a good solo Black Panther adventure and not an Avengers book at all.
I knew that's what you were going to hate about this. You hate it when things are mislabeled or if it's called one thing and doesn't do it enough. Yeah, so I knew you were going to like this.
I don't hate it.
Eh, it seems like it's bothering you.
I hate you can't seem to remember it, like how they're trying to get ready for the tribulation events, and that's why they had to go into the Meridian diadem to force off
the, I appreciate the tribulation. That you remember that offhand, Justin. You didn't have to check.
I remembered it. I'm in the process of remembering it.
Yeah, that's right. I think he's doing a great job remembering. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think this is a fantastic issue of Black Panther, and I don't know what your problem is, Alex. But great start. The old one person can make a difference, and Black Panther is just the one person to prove that. I think this is glorious art. Loved all the battle scenes and stuff. You know, yeah, why not start a Panther gang? You know what I mean?
Yeah, he does a good job with it. And I think this issue, yeah, there's one of the gangs. It's called the Scavengers. But because this is Avengers, I kept saying Scavengers. And that's a cool way to say it.
That is very
cool. That is.
Related, I'm pretty bummed that there's not going to be a second season of Scavengers Reign coming out on Netflix.
Yes. Oh, now see, Alex, that's funny, but also I am sad about that.
I am also sad about
I'm legitimately upset that Scavengers Reign is not coming back. Hmm.
I agree, but unfortunately, it was The Sacrificers, number 12.
Just real quick, I just hope that Black Panther can get out of Meridian Diadem, the living prison, to get back to the Impossible City before the tribulation event.
We all hope that. I mean, we're all worried about that.
All those words are real.
Every morning I wake up my kids saying those exact things.
As you should.
The tribulation event. Dad, you've gone crazy, like your friend Pete.
The Sacrificers, number 12 from Image Comics, written by Rick Remender, art by Max Fumara. A big issue here as our two main characters finally meet, Pigeon and the daughter of the sun, who I'm blanking on the name of, Meridia Dialysis. Is that what it
you
is?
You can't remember anything anymore, dude. You've lost it.
I will say there's a lot of nouns we have to keep in our brains.
Comics are hard and I hate them. Anyway,
wow!
No. This is a great issue of this book, but so much happens here, particularly after several issues of like really focusing it on the characters. It felt like a little bit of whiplash because we end up with Pigeon meeting the main character. Spoilers here, but his family is back, and then horrible things happen to his family, and then he disappears and ends up in a new situation. This felt to me like six issues jammed into one, so it was a wild experience to read.
But I do think that's what Rick Remender's great at that. I think he's just – he's a creator that I want to look back do like a retrospective of all of his work, put it next to each other. Because I feel like his work is just getting more concise and dense as it moves forward, and this issue really proves that.
Wow, that's deep. Yeah, I just think that Remender's going to Remender, man. You know what I mean? Like he'll lead you along this path and then have that one issue that just – breaks your heart, rips you into a million pieces, but you show up at the next issue begging for more. The guy's unbelievable. This has a lot of like soap opera feel moments where it's like, oh my God, my long lost sister. Holy shit, it's you. You know, but I mean, this is all well built to and well delivered upon. And it's all the Remender things. It's heartbreaking. It's moving. You can't believe it. You can. How could you not?
You can't unbelieve it.
Yeah. It's just.
Do you remember the 5th of November? Yes, it was yesterday.
Wow. And And also the art. I mean, come on. I mean, the art.
The art. Action Comics 1074 from DC Comics, written by Mark Waid and Mariko Tamaki, art by Clayton Henry and Michael Shelfer and Skylar Patridge. The backup story continues Supergirl investigating a weird mystery in space. And the front story, Superman has been thrust back in time to Krypton. And the only person who can help him get out of there is Jor-El, his father.
Crazy coinky dink.
Yeah, right.
Really is. I really like this, though. I like the big swing in terms of throwing back in time. Feels like a very classic Mark Waid thing. I'm really enjoying this Phantom Zone story. And the backup story just has some great art from Skylar Patridge.
Yeah, the backup story is pretty light on what's moving, what's happening. But I do like it still. It's very spare, especially when the front story is quite dense. It's interesting reading this right alongside Absolute Superman, where it's like, oh, Krypton. We get a lot of Krypton, but different flavors of Krypton.
Yeah, different takes.
Do you think it's fucked up if you were to meet a baby version of yourself to be like, hey, cute baby? Because that's what Superman does.
Yeah, but I mean, everybody would say that. I mean, even Superman. I mean,
you would say "cute baby" to yourself?
How could you not? It's a joke. You can't not make that joke. It's you. It's a joke for who? No one.
He can't tell.
It's for you.
For me?
It's just for the person saying it because it's like, oh, cute baby. You mean that because it's you and you think.
Are you telling jokes to yourself a lot?
All the time.
Wow.
That's basically the concept of this podcast is three people talking.
That's very fair. Very fair. Yeah, I also think that Superman needs to take an improv class because when his mom says, what's your name? He says, Clark Kent. You got to think a little faster, my man.
Oh, you got
to
be a
little. You got to go A to C.
Man should be a little bit faster than that. Yeah, I agree. Everyone should have to take an improv class.
Pete, you're an improv teacher. In fact, you taught a class called Level Zero. Wait a second.
What?
You used to teach a class called Level Zero, and you hate zero issues. Huh. This is your origin. This is where it came from.
I also, didn't teach it for very long and then moved up to Level One where I was very happy. Anyways, I just
weird,
think that
dark way of saying that. Pete.
Yeah.
What happened in Level Zero?
Nothing. I mean, that's the thing. It's a nice. Nothing really happens.
Something is killing the improv students. More like it, right?
Yes.
Anyways, this is a tight package, as Justin likes to talk about, and it's definitely continues to be such a fine level of writing and artistry. So yeah, this continues in that direction.
X-Force number 5 from Marvel, written by Jeffrey Thorne, art by Marcus Toe. In this issue, we're continuing to have teams fight against Nuklo, the nuclear man, I want to say, as some alternate universe Avengers, and Man-Thing shows up. And there's a lot of stuff going on, and by the end of the issue, one of the characters is dead. There you go.
As long as you fight Nuklo down by the docks, it should be fine.
Oh, I think so. Like I've been saying all along with this book, not all along, in the past couple of issues with this book. I really liked at the beginning the idea of like we're going to a different place, we're fighting these different fractures, and we're getting sort of done in one things that are building to an overall story. We spent too much time in this Nuklo thing, and I know we're moving on from here, but these past three issues were a little bit of a wander for me.
It's a little bit, again, like we've said about a couple other issues, it feels a little scattered or hard to hold on to what's happening in this. And even Forge is like, everyone's like, what's happening, Forge? And he's like, I don't really know, but we got to close this portal or whatever. and so that's a little strange. But the sacrifice that is made in this, I thought was really emotionally done and upsetting.
Yeah, agreed. It was a big sacrifice. It was very emotional. And I like the, at the end, spoilers, the fuck you, Forge. I thought that was a nice moment. But yeah, this felt like a real classic ish here where you have the, hey, it's going to be a big battle. Oh, wait, we should talk. Oh, Phoenix shows up and says, okay, let's do things differently. And then we kind of get this epic, will we save the day moment? And it really felt like a kind of cool X-Force, X-Men type of situation. So, yeah, I thought this was done well and had some nice art.
All right, next up, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Mutant Nation number 2 from IDW, written by Tom Waltz and Eric Burnham, art by Vincenzo Federici and Mateus Santoluco. We're telling two stories here. One, Raphael ends up in Area 52, and then in the backup story, Casey Jones is going on some adventures of his own. Pete, you're a turtle guy. What'd you think about this?
Well, I mean, first off, the parrot named Pete, who just says, I'm Pete. I mean, that's awesome. I mean, that's just.
Finally saw yourself on screen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cute baby, he says to himself.
Yeah. I had my cute baby moment right there. So that was just great. Yeah, this is fun. This is a lot of cool stuff. We get Jenica stuff in here, which is great. Some great Rocksteady Bebop stuff. Casey Jones. This is full Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles nostalgia, and I'm all for it, man.
You can't have nostalgia if you never let it go to begin with, Pete, and you have it. So
I guess
you're still in it. This is fun action throughout.
Great.
Casey Jones' superpower is just like working at a Dick's Sporting Goods.
Yeah, but you guys liked Pete the Parrot, though, right?
I mean, I love Pete the Parrot. That was very fun. My issue with this is the same as the last one, where like they have this clarity of focus in the main Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles title. I would love if Raphael was not in this. Like, I want him I want the focus of the main four brothers to be in the TMNT title. Here, love the idea of seeing what's going on elsewhere in the Mutant Nation per the title of the book, but I don't want the main TMNT in it. That's all.
Interesting. Weird. Well, you got to sell those four guys or sell the
They're money in the bank. Oh, I know.
Yeah, exactly. Here for the turtles, bro.
Yeah. I'm just here for the turtles. Poison Ivy, number 27 from DC Comics, written by G. Willa Wilson, art by Mauricio Takara. In this issue, Ivy has been implicated in a deed she did not do, a series of bombings by a new ecological terrorist group. And meanwhile, while she's trying to investigate that and find out who is framing her, Janet from HR makes some big moves in this issue. I love this book. This is dark. It's weird. It's interesting. Great stuff.
Yeah, man. I completely agree. G. Willow Wilson is killing this, and the art's just glorious. I love all the twists and turns. Love the kind of, spoiler, but the angry fan club at the end, and then the kiss. Woohoo! Yeah, this is just awesome on many levels and continues to be so.
Killer kiss is what I say. Ooh, yeah, this is fantastic. Nice. We've loved 26 issues of this pretty exclusively. Never a bad thing to say. And I'm going to go ahead and put that stamp on number 27.
That's impressive. That's a hell of a run.
Great run.
Blood Hunters, number 4 from Marvel, written by Eric Schultz.
The blood hunt continues. Blood
hunt. Yeah. Never ending blood hunt.
Art by Robert Gill and Chris Campana. In this issue, the Blood Hunter team is trying to save Dagger from not the Ashen Combine. What is this group called?
Alex.
Come on, Alex.
Are you still caught in Meridian Diadem when you don't understand?
What's your deal?
That we're worried about the Blood Coven here. The Blood Coven.
Yeah, of course.
It's almost right on the cover there. Mm-hmm.
It's very close, but it's not. What'd you guys think? Do you have any thoughts about this comic book you want to share?
Oh, I thought you were going to continue name of the coven. Oh, okay.
My brain is full of remembering names, so I don't have anything to say.
Yeah, this continues to be a blast. It was a little sad that as soon as Spider-Man leaves, that was the kind of that one thing keeping it all together. But, you know, they got to save Dazzler, so great cast, great action. I'm still enjoying the hell out of this.
Dagger. I made that mistake a couple of issues back. It's Dagger, not Dazzler.
Yeah, but, you know, I think of you when I see anything close to Dazzler.
Oh, my God, thank you so much.
Wow, that's so beautiful.
Yeah. It shouldn't be. I hate Dazzler as a character.
Cute baby.
Oh, wow. Interesting, cute baby. I like these characters. I do think it's strange they're still fighting the Blood Coven, a team that was billed as like, holy shit, can the entire Marvel Universe beat these super vampires? And then now they seem like a weird like junior varsity team trying to like win a soccer game. So that's strange, but I'm ready. I would like to see this team do other stuff.
The key is to slice oranges at halftime. It really gives you the energy you need.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, orange suck slices. Them dry. Suck those orange slices dry.
Skin Police, number 2 from Odie Press, written by Jordan Thomas, art by Daniel Jeté. This takes place in a world where clones have been created of samples of people's skin, and they have a habit of going crazy and killing everybody. We're sort of following the resistance against that, and on the other side, the Skin Police themselves are trying to track down these cells. This book is great. The satire is clearly there. The art is excellent. I'm really intrigued by both sides of this conflict. This gets better issue by issue, by which I mean it was really good in the first issue, and now it's even better in the second issue.
Wow, what a take.
Yeah.
Keeps improving no matter how many issues we get. Number 2. Skin Police, that's my grandmother trying to find out if I have a tattoo. So that's why.
Oh boy.
You know?
Is this triggering for you?
Yeah,
you
exactly.
Well,
I agree with Alex, so this is fun.
Oh, go ahead.
You go.
Yeah, this is really glorious art. I love the splash page of the underground world we get in this, and then the close up on the faces for different panels. Just really, really creatively done, so well thought out. The girl crying was so powerful. I just think this is a ton of action, a lot of really cool things is happening here, but that creepy dude in the truck was really gross, and I wish I didn't have to see that.
There you go. Shazam number 17 from DC Comics, written by Josie Campbell, art by Dan McDade. Freddy, that's what his name is. Nice. Captain Marvel Jr., who is now going by the Commander, is being corrupted by an evil piece of magic that may or may not be evil, but that is exactly what Shazam and Billy Batson, who are now separate, want to find out what's going on. Meanwhile, Mary Marvel is doing some stuff on her own. I continue to really like this title. It's a lot of fun. It's intriguing. And Josie Campbell knows how to handle these characters very well.
It's very, just a subtle sidebar, a slight tangent. Freddie Freeman, the name of this character we're talking about, was also the superstar from the Dodgers who basically won the World Series.
It's too soon, dude. It's too soon.
Isn't that crazy?
Was that his name?
His name is Freddie Freeman. He, like, hit a home run in every game. Is that true, P?
Yeah.
Do you think he cheated using Shazam powers? Is that what
he
happened?
Screamed Shazam? Like
it. He sucked for so long, and all of a sudden he showed up, and it was all of a sudden just Shazamming the crap out of it.
It was when I found out his name was Freddie Freeman. I'm not a big baseball fan. I watched that first game when he smashed in the game-winning, maybe almost grand slam, and everyone was like, "Wow, Freddie Freeman!" I was like, "What'd you say? Did I fall into a dimension that I shouldn't have?" Anyway. This book is still fun.
Yeah, Alex said all the right things about this.
Oh, thanks, Pete. Appreciate it. Guilt Frame, number 3 from Dark Horse Comics, written by Matt Kent and Margie Krafkin, art by Matt Kent. This is the final issue of this mystery series by mother-son team of Kents, and I thought this was fantastic. If you missed this, go back, pick up the individual issues. Great mystery. I did not see the end coming at all, and I do not want to spoil it for you, but one of my favorite twists I've read in a comic book in a really, really long time. The art is great, as always, with Matt Kent, but this was an absolute delight.
Of all the crime stories built around furniture, this one's the best.
Yeah, man. Creepy as hell cover. This was such a cool murder mystery feel to it. Love the crazy twists and turns. It set up such a cool tone for this tale. The tension, this is just the cool splash pages. Yeah, I was just super impressed with the vibes and the way this all played out, like going really small panels, then bigger stuff. The artistry of the storytelling here is just such another level. This is just really impressive.
And it's G-I-L-T, Guilt.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Not like the other stuff that I've never felt.
Why don't we move to our last title, Godzilla's Monsterpiece Theater, number 2 from IDW by Tom Scioli. Wow. We, in the first issue, this is a mashup of what if Godzilla was in The Great Gatsby, but by the end of the issue, they added in a bunch of other characters, including Sherlock Holmes, the Time Machinist from H.G. Wells' The Time Machine, and a cyborg version of Jules Verne. It goes even further off the rails in this issue with a bunch of other literary characters. Man, I love this comic book. It's absolutely insane, but also like good Godzilla action at the same time. And also somehow does it ignore the plot ideas of The Great Gatsby? I don't know how they're doing it, but I'm having a blast reading this book.
Yeah, agreed. The art's really nice. Very four color, funny style art. Excellent. And it's sort of like this title, the first issue is like a fun joke, but it's like, but if you just kept hearing the joke, if the joke just had to keep going, and it was rather than like a one-liner, it was like, no, and now I'm an hour into this same joke. That's what this is, and it still manages to be funny.
Yeah, I agree. It's super impressive what they're pulling off here. This is more than just a one-trick pony. This is a well-executed idea that keeps growing, and it's such a cool artistic use of Godzilla in different ways. And calling stuff back and tying stuff in. So, yeah, super impressive what's happening here. This is just a blast and continues to be a ton of fun.
I totally agree. And I also agree that we need to stop counting the amount of tricks that ponies are doing. Come on. They're more than that.
Yeah, what year is it? You know what I mean? Come on.
I didn't see most ponies I encounter are no trick ponies.
Oh, yeah.
They don't do anything.
What? I met a 5-trick pony once. Too many tricks, man.
Damn.
Too many tricks.
What are the tricks? Can you list the tricks?
Well, probably moonwalk was probably one of them.
Yeah, moonwalk was
great,
one of them.
Great, a lot of ponies.
Yeah, ponies probably do. Doing the Cabbage Patch. Ponies love doing the Cabbage Patch.
It wasn't all dance moves, I want to specify, but so far Pete is right on the money. Anyway, wow. Speaking of money, if you want to support this podcast, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Facebook and YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about comic books. Apple, Spotify, Android, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow the show at Comic Book Live on Twitter/X, Comic Book Club Live on TikTok and Instagram, comicbookclublive.com. For this podcast, many more. Until next time, we'll see you at the Comic Book Club.
Camp's over.
Sit on crappy couches and they let the secrets leak. And occasionally they let that special guest speak. So grab your grimace.